Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Fourth episode of Why Are People Into That, the podcast that will totally give you a stick and poke if you think you can handle it. It's a new year, 2017, and thank God, because I was very tired of living in a year that killed Prince and David Bowie and George Michael and Princess Leia and American democracy. But it's a new season of Why Are People Into That, and it's also the holiday, and I'm traveling, and so I'm recording this in a house in Ukiah, California. I can see everyone I love the most in the world from where I'm sitting at my computer, and there's a hot tub I'm going to get back in just as soon as I'm done recording this for you. I didn't bring my H4N recorder or my microphone, so please, forgive the less than stellar sound, just this once. I'm very excited to be kicking off the year by introducing you to Tamara Santibanez, a punk Chicana tattoo artist and indie publisher. This is part one of our conversation about the art of breaking the skin and the language of the body. Part two will be out as usual on January 15th. You can read an essay I wrote about Tamara and the sexual possibilities of tattoos on the intersectional feminist blog, The Establishment. That's theestablishment.co, not .com. Since it's a new year, I do want to give a little bit of a push to anyone who enjoys the show. If you could head on over to Patreon, which is just kind of like an ongoing Kickstarter, and pledge $5 a month, $10 a month to this podcast, it really helps me to continue to do it and to move towards doing it more often and maybe to move towards doing it exclusively. As you know, I produce this podcast 100% by myself, 100% indie, and I do depend on my fans to support my work. If you pledge to my Patreon, you'll get updates on all of my writing and live appearances and free swag and a chance to get to know me better. So head on over to patreon.com/TinaHorn. That's patreon.com/TinaHorn. I gotta make that paper, people. So get out your latex gloves and saran wrap and isopropyl alcohol and paper towels for part one of Why Are People Into Tattoos?
Hi, Tamara.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Well, I'm a little under the weather. As you know, I just like grossly neti potted, and you were very kind to tolerate that, although I think you have like probably a high tolerance for like viscera and gross things.
It's specific. Some of it is I'm unaffected by, and some of it I am not. But you know, I didn't see you neti pot. I only heard the sounds of you neti pot potting. So it was not that bad.
Good. Well, I won't subject anyone to that anytime soon, I don't think. I'm so glad that you're here. I've been wanting to do this for a while.
I've really been looking forward to it.
Awesome. So you are many things. You are a tattoo artist and an independent publisher and an artist. And I want you to talk about all of those things. Since we're going to talk about why are people into tattoos today? Maybe let's start by talking about your art and publishing work, and then mm-hmm. we'll like get more into the tattoo stuff.
Okay.
So tell me about Discipline Press.
So Discipline Press is an independent, not-for-profit publishing house that I started at the beginning of 2016. So it's just coming up on its first year anniversary. It's a baby publishing house still.
Happy birthday.
Yeah.
Mazel tov.
So,
so I
started this publishing company because I had been self-publishing work for a long time. I have a background in printmaking, so I was doing a lot of editioning for other people, printing my own zines, posters, t-shirts, things like that, distributing them. And I would get a lot of questions and requests for help from people that I knew as to how to do those things themselves. So I started with doing some compilations of work from people that I knew. And I saw a lot of... I do the Printed Matter Art Book Fair every year, and I was seeing a lot of frustration through people that I knew, just issues that they were having with their publishers and issues I was having with publishers I was working with. And I, as with most new things, I think I just thought I could do a better job. So I've been focusing on the mission of it has changed a little bit as of more recently. But really the idea is to promote works that connect subculture and sexuality, political identity and personal experience. So that can look like a lot of things. I am putting out a pretty wide variety of things, recently and coming up, but, work focusing on Chicano identity. I've been putting out interviews, online content. I just put out an interview with, 18 Tellez, who, is a science fiction writer who
Fuck yeah.
writes, who's part of an all people of color, Philadelphia based sci-fi writing collective. So we did a little interview about, politics and sci-fi. I'm putting out a couple books upcoming. I'm putting out a zine for a genderqueer artist named Sally Rose, who's also a tattooer. I'm putting out a photography book for an artist named Caroline Shub, whose work deals with her own chronic illness. And I'm also putting out a book in early next year that I've been editing for the last year on redefining sexiness as a political expression.
And so you... contacted me about contributing to that, and it's called Sexiness. You told me the name, Rituals, Revisions, and Reconstructions, mm-hmm. right? And so you contacted me about contributing, you know, like something about like what is sexy to you and, you know, your personal sexual expression. And like, I'm just going to be real with you. I get a lot of such requests like in my inbox, and, you know, I am at the point in my career where I have enough time and like patience to look up most of the people who contact mm-hmm. me about getting involved in their projects, and, you know, spending about 5 minutes, you know, kind of like Googling them and looking at their social media and like seeing what they're about and if I'm about what they're about. And like most of the time I'm not. Most of the time I'm like, okay, cool. Like, unless you can like pay me my rate, like I, you know, am, like can't be involved in your project, like best of luck. But you contacted me and I looked you up and I was like, oh, this person is really cool. Like, and that like almost never happens to me where I'm like, oh, this person is cooler than me.
I don't know about that. Okay.
Well, I it's not a contest, but you're very cool and your work is very cool. And, you know, coolness aside, your work is so up my alley in like so many ways. And like everything that you just described about your press is so great. And like the ethos behind it and, the people that are involved in it. So I ended up contributing to that and I can't wait to see it. And who else is, involved in that one? In Sexiness?
There are quite a lot, actually. I think last count, I'm just wrapping up the submissions now, but I think there are 45 people in it now.
Amazing.
Including people like Buck Angel is in it. Kia LaBeija from the House of LaBeija is in it.
Oh, man.
This artist Doreen Garner, who I'm a big fan of, is in it. Another artist named Hank Coe. this woman, Gloria, who does a project called Nalgona Positivity Pride. Nalgona basically means like big ass.
Well, hell yeah.
Yeah, I'm blanking a little bit on, you know, there's drag performers, there's sex workers, there's people whose work focuses on decolonizing sex education. Oh my God. There's people who do sex ed for people with disabilities. So I really have been working hard on trying to make it inclusive and trying to make some space specifically for voices that I wanted to hear their perspective about sexuality and sexiness that don't get to be heard very often, I think.
Well, I'm honored to be involved in a project with all of those people. And, you know, and also I what I like about that is that there's, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there where people are like, well, let's just like talk about like what's sexy to all of us, but not a lot of stuff that has like the vitality of like, well, why should we make another one, you know, like what voices are like not being heard on the subject. And I just, so I'm really excited about that and right. All your work.
Thank you. Yeah. I think I really do believe in what people have submitted. And whenever I've gotten a new submission, I've felt really excited that what I was hoping to put forward seems to be coming together the way I wanted. Well, actually, one of the ones that I'm particularly excited about is that Patrick Califia has a piece of writing in it.
That is amazing. Patrick Califia, I mean, Macho Sluts is like my, like,
yeah.
Porno Bible. Yeah. And speaking.
Coming to Power.
Coming to Power.
That was
right.
The first and one that I read. Coming to Power.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
How's Pat?
Pat is okay.
Yeah.
Maybe not so great. I think he's moving. I think cool. He's moving to the West Coast, he mentioned. So
cool.
Hopefully that'll be a good change.
Yeah, totally.
But I'm so excited to be including him. His writing has been so formative for me.
Same.
And yeah, I'm so honored that you're in it too. And I'll take this moment too to say that I'm totally fanning out right now because the reason I knew about you was because of the podcast.
Oh, cool.
And then reading your writing also. So to be on the podcast is like bucket list moment for me.
Wow.
And I've had a crush on your radio voice since I first started listening to the podcast.
Well,
so
isn't it appropriate that my voice is totally compromised by being super dead of winter congested right now?
I think we're all suffering from that a little bit.
Yeah, no, totally. Well, that I just... I feel great. I feel great about that. Love all around. Besides your amazing publishing and, you know, the visual art that you do as well. So you're a tattoo artist. And when we were talking about how you got started as a tattoo artist, I just, your story captivated me so much because it just made me realize like why from the minute that I met you, I felt like I'd known you for a long time. So will you tell the story of how you got started tattooing?
Okay. So I feel like I told this story a lot, but every time I tell it, I still am in disbelief a little bit because it is kind of a crazy story. It's a little bit unusual. So I, in another lifetime, many years ago, I was... really a huge crust punk. And I was living in a lot of punk houses and collective spaces. And so of course I dabbled in doing stick and poke tattoos as many of us did.
Yes.
And I really wanted to learn how to tattoo for real. And I was getting tattooed more and more around that time. I didn't have a lot of money, but I was lucky enough to know people who would barter with me or who would kind of give me a deal but actually being able to get quality work done. And the more that I saw it, the more I really wanted to learn how to do it. So
in New York?
Yeah, that was here in New York. That
I feel
was
like
probably...
perhaps. You should explain what a crust punk is to any of my listeners that don't know.
How
I feel like probably there are some crust punks out there listening to this show. Like shout out to all my crusties, but for those who don't, how would you define that?
Well, I wore clothing that was made almost entirely of patches. I ate a lot of food that I dumpster dived. I rode my bicycle everywhere. And I, you know, had hairy armpits. And I believe that showers were like a construct of capitalism like really uncool.
This is anybody that knows me will know what exactly what I mean when I say that I feel like that, you know, we're kin.
Yes,
Tamara.
Yes. Yeah. You know what? That was a time.
I still kind of think that about showers.
I agree. There's a lot of those things. I still hold very dear. My lifestyle politics look a little different now, but you're
very uptight now. It's like very evident. You can't see,
but I'm wearing a suit. I'm wearing a pantsuit. I wish I were wearing a pantsuit.
That would be amazing if you showed up. Like, you were like, hashtag pantsuit nation.
Ready for my radio time.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So then the first person to show me how to set up a tattoo machine. Okay. So we had a traveler guy staying with us who was, you know, like a fray hopper, and he had Ride Faux Free tattooed on his knuckles.
Okay.
His name was Yasha, and he came back to our house one day with a tattoo machine, like a whole setup for doing tattoos. And I was like, hold the phone. You can just go buy tattoo supplies at the store.
And so how old were you?
I was probably 20 or 21 at that time.
Cool.
And so he was like, yeah, there's this store where you can just go buy this stuff. And he showed me how to set up the machine, and he let me do a couple tattoos with it. And so I went in and out and I bought a machine, and I bought all the stuff to tattoo. And my thought at the time, I was finishing school and I really wanted to get like a proper apprenticeship in, like, you know, in quotation marks. And I didn't think I could do it while I was in school because I knew it required an enormous time commitment.
Yeah.
So my thought was, well, I can maybe kind of try it out on my own and see if it's something I even think I could do or be good at. And then maybe I'll be a little more prepared when I try to seek out an apprenticeship once I finish college. So I gave a lot of homemade tattoos because I had a lot of punk friends that wanted free tattoos and they didn't care what they looked like that much. And I did that. I tattooed out of this punk house called 538 Johnson for a while. And what ended up happening was that I got tattooed. I mean, you know, I was trying to be somewhat serious about it. I was looking at a lot of traditional tattoo flash, drawing flash, painting watercolor, trying to figure out the right way to do things. And I had a little bit of help from some tattooers that I knew who were supportive. But I also knew that, you know, scratching, as it's called, when, you know, when you're tattooing really illegitimately and was very frowned upon. So I was pretty private about it. I definitely was not telling most of the people I was getting tattooed by that I was doing that.
Because of like hygiene considerations, or is it more like a status thing?
Partially, I would say partially both.
Yeah.
I think people use the, I would say more it's about the ignorance. You know, people say, oh, you know, you are going to get a crazy looking tattoo that like could get infected, or that's kind of the fear with homemade tattoos or getting tattooed by people who don't know what they're doing.
But you totally knew what you were doing.
Oh, I 100% knew totally what I was doing. No, I knew some of what I was doing because of watching people tattoo me in shops and from my friends that were helping me with a little info. But so I was fortunate in that way. So I did a tattoo on a friend of mine. And I happened to know the people who owned Three Kings Tattoo because I had traded them some silk screening work for getting tattooed by the owner, Alex McWatt, or one of the owners. And I mean, he was like an old hardcore kid. I think he totally had me pegged and knew that I was tattooing out of my house because I probably was like, oh, I think I would really like to learn how to tattoo. And he was like, well, you got to, you know, it's a lot of work. You got to be really clean. So I think he knew what was going on. But so I got tattooed. I kind of had a conversation with him. And then And then a friend of mine that I had tattooed in my house went and got tattooed at the shop the day after I had tattooed him. And they saw that he had a fresh tattoo and they asked him who did it. And he told them, oh, my friend Tamara did it at her place. So I get a phone call and they're like, hi, Tamara, this is Miles from Three Kings. We saw that tattoo that you did on your friend.
And you were like, busted.
I was like, busted. I thought for sure they were going to be like, we're shutting your ass down, you know. But they were like, oh, do you want to come do tattoos here? Like,
wow.
And so I went and talked with them about it. And they basically, probably in so many words, were like, you don't really know what you're doing, but it looked okay, and you kind of know what you're doing, so you just need some direction and a little bit of help. So I started working there by appointment a few days a week and just charging the shop minimum for everything in the beginning. And I did that while I was finishing school for maybe about 6 months, and then I started working there full-time after that.
Cool.
Yeah, and so I count when I started tattooing, when I started working there, because that was really when I properly started tattooing and was doing it consistently. So it's been 7 years now, almost exactly.
Cool. And so according to the internet, it seems like you're known for your like Chicana, like old school style, but then also actually depicting like BDSM and kink and leather in your tattoos, and that maybe you have like a lot of clients who like are kinky people who come to you who like want tattoos of kinky things or like related to that. Like, is that accurate, or is that like kind of like sensationalized
is accurate. That's something that I like to encourage. I actually made a listing with the Kink Aware Professionals database.
Oh, nice.
As a Kink Aware tattooer. But yeah, I mean, I've tattooed kinky people, with non kink related imagery,
yeah,
but I've also done a lot of kink image tattoos, whether that's leather gloves, ball gags, leashes, things like that.
Yeah.
And I do think, I don't want to credit myself too much here, but I do think I was one of the first people who was doing that, a lot, at least in recent years. I don't really remember seeing very much of that being done before that.
So what got you interested in tattooing that kind of imagery?
Well, I was painting that kind of imagery a lot in my own work, and I didn't really think people would be interested in getting it tattooed. So I wasn't making flash of it necessarily intending to tattoo it, but people were asking about the paintings and they were asking about getting tattoos. So once I realized that, I realized I could play on existing imagery and tattooing and change it slightly in ways that would be more suited. And there's a lot of things in tattooing that are sort of standbys or mainstays of the imagery and the iconography that I don't feel that they're relevant to me.
Interesting.
Right? I think that they're beautiful and timeless, but I don't feel a connection to them so personally.
Can you give me an example? Like, is this like the sort of Sailor Jerry style? Like,
right.
Like sort of like the certain kind of like white babe body?
Yeah, yeah. I'm yeah, or, guessing. You know, or like a girl head of that kind. You know, I would see a tattoo like that and I'd be like, this is a beautiful lady and it's a great tattoo. But if I'm going to draw a tattoo that's more fun for me and feels like it comes from me, maybe I'll give her like a Chelsea haircut and a nose ring.
Yeah. Or like a collar.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So that was really fun for me to do. And it still is fun for me to do. But to incorporate those elements into, and it was a way for me to personalize it a little bit and bring my own interests into tattooing. And people responded to it really well, way more than I thought that they would. And I think maybe people felt that they hadn't seen that before, or they hadn't felt like it could be tattooed tastefully or something. Because I had a couple of clients who I can remember for sure were the first two people to come to me and specifically say, I want these very unmistakable BDSM-related tattoos in very visible areas on my body.
Yeah.
And one was a client of mine who is self-employed. He's in his 40s. He's like a militant anarchist. And the other tattoos that I have given him are of like Molotov cocktails and like churches burning and like cops dying. So, you know, doing a gimp mask tattoo was not really that much of a stretch for him.
Yeah.
And then the other person was my friend January, who is a trans woman who is very out about being kinky and has worked as like a kink professional in the past. So I would say people who gave zero fucks.
Yeah. You kind of have to.
Yeah. But
if you're going to get that, but that kind of people, tattoo.
But now I think people are getting them done in ways that are a little more subtle.
Yeah.
That might feel more wearable to them. Maybe a little more of like the coded language aspect of it, where it's not screaming like, hey, I love getting flogged, but more of the like, if you know, you know.
Yeah. That kind of thing is really fun.
I do like that.
I mean, so much of, you know, maybe this will get into a little bit of our subject today, but like, I do feel like, it's interesting that you say that, because like so much of how like people who are a part of underground cultures find one another is through those, like encryptions, basically, like through those codes, you know, partially because it's like a sense of belonging and like a sense of like of affiliation, but also as a way of staying safe, right? To be able to like indicate your identity, to indicate your queerness, to indicate your kinkiness, to like indicate like who you are to people who like know what that imagery means, but that like will A, like not be like considered obscene or offensive, you know, like in, you know, average mainstream society, but also like won't be, you could like pass undetected.
Right.
Yeah.
And tattooing is rife with that type of thing. I mean, it is a wearable visual language.
Yeah.
And that's something I love about it, is that you can read a lot about people. If you even have a little bit of fluency, maybe in the language, you can read it and you can pick up information about people, and that's like a whole other topic. I feel like I could go on about that forever, but then I think then you have the look of being tattooed as a whole, sort of like the general look of being tattooed. And that I think is something that's extra. Very heavily fetishized, and the ways that's fetishized has changed a lot over the years.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it wasn't that long ago. Well, first of all, I'm sure you know this, but I was shocked to learn that it was illegal to give tattoos in New York City until 96.
Yeah. Isn't that wild?
I couldn't believe that year when I read that recently. Yeah. You know, so it's really... you know, and it was not that long ago to the point where, you know, even today, I mean, I think that like people are, you know, experience like a generation gap, like with their parents, you know, never mind their grandparents, feeling like, you know, tattoos like mean, like the fact that you have a tattoo means that you're a certain kind of person that I don't want you to be. And you know, that is changing, which is a double-edged sword. On one hand, like, you know, like people don't have to worry as much about not being able to get a job because they have a tattoo. If they want a tattoo, like it is going to be okay. And like a lot more spaces than it used to be. At the same time, it's like diluting the
taboo charge or the effectiveness of it as a rebellious signifier.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that is something. I mean, I am 29. I've been getting tattoos since I was 17. So 12 years, just over a decade, really. That's not that long in the grand scheme of things. But I remember when I first started getting tattooed, I absolutely did not get tattooed because I thought it would be sexy or cute or stylish. I was getting tattooed because I wanted to be punk and scary and tough looking. And
which is all so obscured by your pantsuit now.
right. So seeing women who were heavily tattooed was something I aspired to be like, because it was repulsive to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And it was very effective in that way then. And still is in certain places. I mean, I'm saying this from, you know, Brooklyn and sure. New York. But living in Georgia was a place where you would get like Slurpees thrown at you from your car.
Oh, sure.
Or you know, from passerbys, or like things yelled at you, or like people following you in their cars. I mean, even now,
because
when
you
I
had
go
tattoos,
home, just being punk or yeah. different in general.
Yeah, sure.
But being tattoos was a big part. Tattooed was a big part of that. And even now when I go home, I'm by far the most heavily tattooed person I've ever seen.
Would you go to Georgia?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I mean, I grew up in a college town there. But yeah, I've never seen another person with as many tattoos, I don't think, there. And so I remember pretty distinctly the time where there was the rise of things like Suicide Girls yeah. and Burning Angels.
Totally.
That were trying to position being tattooed and body modded in yeah. various ways as a positive and sexy thing. And so seeing the change between that and between now what's promoted as a sexy tattooed person yeah. image, which essentially is like a very traditionally hot, you typically white person with many tattoos.
Totally.
a model with tattoos, basically.
Totally.
Is interesting.
Yeah, I mean, my like first porn love was Burning Angel, and like part of it
was it Let Me Come on Your Tattoo?
That was an early one. Yeah, I got the first DVD that they did with Hustler. I think it's called Joanna's Angels. And I loved it. And, you know, and like part of it was that they were tattooed, but you know, it's so funny because like, it was less for me about like finding their tattoos sexy and more that like with being like tattooed girls came this like fuck you attitude that,
yeah.
And that was what I found sexy. And like, yeah, for the most part they were like, they, you know, they had like, you know, like skinny porn star bodies. What does that even mean? They were conventionally attractive mm-hmm. women who like happened to like be tattoos who happened to have tattoos or have like septum rings, you know, right. or like, you know, like yeah. black bobs. But that was always sort of like my critique of like Burning Angel and Suicide Girls and like a lot of that kind of thing was that it was like, well, I don't know, the idea of like alt being like so like such a crazy and extreme form of porn, but like you know, they weren't like breaking any ground with like the kind of sex that they were depicting right. or like the kinds of bodies that they were depicting. It really was just like the body mods that they had, and to a certain degree, like the attitude that they had, I think, that I loved about them.
I liked that it was a little bit, it was a little more like self-aware and self-referential.
That's true.
It seemed kind of irreverent,
yeah.
Which was something that was different about it. But yet, I mean, now it really has changed so much to the point that people, I mean, I can't tell you how many times, even on, you know, like FetLife or something, people will message me and they'll be like, oh, you must want to be photographed by me or being asked to be photographed. And that's not, it's really not something I'm interested in that way.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, yeah, that we could like fill an hour just talking about this, but like, what the fuck?
Well, I mean, maybe let's talk about why those things came to be what they are, which I think, yeah. you know, with the porn aspect, it was just capitalizing on something that already existed, which totally. Was people people who did not have those things fetishizing
right.
what they perceived them to symbolize, you know, like deviance, an alternative sexuality.
Like the cool girl, right? The like girl who's like the... Like you can like she has tattoos, so she like probably will take it in the butt, you know, which like, which like, you know, it probably you may not be wrong, you know, but right. Like yeah. the idea that
they'll do something different. You know, like I think
that they're like edgier or more fearless or more wild
more open or yeah, maybe yeah. you're a little intimidated by them and you're turned on by that.
Right. Oh, yeah, definitely that.
Yeah. And I think that the difference, the larger the difference, like the perceived difference, the more fetishized it is. Like, I mean, just take a walk. Like, I'll just tell you, walking through like the financial district.
Sure.
I'm like, don't look at me. Please yeah. don't look at me.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I want my body to be appreciated as a tattooed body, but that doesn't mean that I want to be looked at every moment any more than somebody who doesn't have tattoos. And it really is the same, you know, with like any kind of adornment, even adornments that you can like take on and off, like right. your clothes or your shoes or your makeup or whatever, right? Like just because you like adorn yourself to feel confident and glamorous, that doesn't mean that you are asking for it. It doesn't mean that people are then like entitled to like look at you in a certain way or like assume that you are, that you like want to be seen.
Right. And I think that that's part of why, another part of why tattoos are fetishized the way they are, people are drawn to them in the way they are, is because when it comes down to it and it's most simple level, it is your body and yeah. it is a point of access to your body that I think people who are not so conscious of boundaries and privacy yeah. are very quick to seize upon. We see that a lot in people using thinly veiled innuendo to talk to you about your tattoos. Like,
totally.
Oh, I just love your body of work. Or
well, I mean, exactly. I mean, even like less or like self-aware you. Of that. Yeah, absolutely. Touching. I mean, if people who are listening to the sound of our voices right now are not aware of the fact that like women in particular who have tattoos, like have to deal with people thinking that you're like entitled to touch our bodies. Like don't touch the paintings in the museum. Don't touch the art of my body. It's my fucking body, you know, but also like even less self-aware than like, oh, I really like your body of work. You know, I mean, I've been in so many situations where, people and you know and sometimes it is like a sexual gaze like from a man, but also I have had an experience, there's one particular experience that I like talked about a lot where I belonged to a gym, and every time I would go to the sauna, like the same like older ladies were there every day and they always wanted to talk to me about my tattoos, and like I like made it really clear that I was like there to like have some like quiet and some stillness or to like read or whatever. And they just like would not take a hint or even take me like being really clear with them. And they always wanted, you know, they wanted to learn every story behind every tattoo. And the thing that flabbergasted me about it was, that they didn't seem to like make the connection that they were talking to me about my body.
Right.
That they, you know, in like, oh, like garlic, why do you have garlic? It's like, you have just said that you are looking at my body. And if I was like, oh, so like, what's the deal with like that, like scar in your belly? Or like, why are your toes like that?
People
you know?
Don't make that connection. They think, they really don't. And I also was thinking about this earlier that tattoos, like you said earlier, they are adornment, and I think that they fall somewhere in that gray area of like a something that adorns the body but simultaneously reveals and accentuates the body. So I totally think that it can be sexualized in the way that like sheer stockings are sexualized, or like a right semi-transparent top might be sexualized, or it's something that you that like yeah reveals and hides at the same time.
But then people assume that if you are wearing like silk stockings or like wearing a push-up bra, that you that like now you're like available for consumption, or right, or that if you have tattoos that you're like I want you to look at me, and also like I am, yeah, that I'm now my body is available for consumption. And it's just not, that's just not accurate. It's just not true.
It's not true. People have so many reasons for getting tattooed that are, that range from the unbelievably personal and private to ones that are totally banal. And yeah, people need to understand that. I don't know if people are so aware of this, but I think subconsciously people do have in their minds the pain association with tattoos.
Right.
Because that's another form of invasive question that I've gotten sure from strangers a lot. Like, oh, so you must like pain.
Doesn't that hurt?
Or do you enjoy getting, you must enjoy getting tattooed. Or,
that's so interesting.
Right. And it can be semi-accusatory, or it can be semi-titillated.
Or
well,
like people will just jump right to like, they'll see you have tattoos and then they're like, well, I could never do that because I think that it would hurt too much. I'll be like, cool, I definitely did not ask you. I like don't care what your relationship is to pain, actually. Right. Like,
well, the relationship to pain thing is interesting because I, like I said before, I tattoo a lot of kinky people, and I've tattooed a lot of masochists, a lot of self-identified masochists.
Yeah.
And I don't know that anyone I've tattooed has enjoyed the feeling of getting tattooed. And I think, I mean, kinky people are fantastic at receiving pain.
Yeah.
And they sit really, really well for their tattoos. But I don't know if anyone has really had an erotic experience while getting tattooed from me.
Why do you think people are into getting tattoos? Why do you think people are into tattooed people?
I think on a basic level, getting tattooed is a way to assert some kind of ownership or autonomy with your body.
Absolutely.
And a way to signify that.
Absolutely.
I think that there's a pretty clear trajectory of that, of people using it in that way. And I mean, that's why there's so much friction, right, with people who don't understand that, wanting to use the tattoos as a way to intrude upon other people's privacy, because a lot of people, for them, whether that's, you know, whether it's a body image thing, whether it's in memory of someone who passed, it can be a really radical act, I think, I have a lot of queer clients, I have a lot of trans clients, I have a lot of female clients, and I think that that's something that is important for people, is to be able to make choices about what to do with their own bodies.
Absolutely.
I think there's a lot of significance to it visually. You know, people choosing symbols to wear is as old as humans existing.
Totally.
And
making sort of like a commitment to an image, to right, a symbol, you know, and just, you know, whatever happens in my life, I am going to like be committed to this moment in time when this symbol was important to
me,
or to like have it as a reminder that something is important to me, or, you know, whatever it is that it represents. And that choice is totally yours.
Or that moment being as significant, if not more, as the tattoo itself is over time.
Yeah.
You know, the idea of a rite of passage or,
a ritual.
Ritualized tattooing. And so that, I think, is a very brief scratching of the surface of the psychology of why people get tattooed. But then I think sexual, you know, why people are attracted to tattoos. I do think that it still carries a lot of the taboo it, which is going to be attractive no matter what. I think there will still people tattooed people will continue to find ways to make it taboo no matter how mainstream it gets.
Yeah.
And actually, I just had this conversation with my friend Sally Rose, whose zine I'm putting out, about having to, as a tattooed person who set out to be anti-establishment with your body, as the standard or the bar keeps changing for what is edgy, how do you renegotiate your relationship to that? Do you have to tattoo your whole face? Do you have to color your whole arm black? Do you have to tattoo your eyelids? What does that look like exactly? Which I think people are figuring out now.
When you make a decision to like make your body like abject to, you know, the mainstream, and then all of a sudden the mainstream is like, that's so cute. You're like, no, fuck you. Oh God.
Oh my God. I feel that every moment of every day.
Sure, sure.
People will be like, oh my God, I love your style. Your tattoos are so cute. And I'm like, no, they're not cute. Okay. It's a Reaper. It's not cute. It's a scorpion, man. It's tough. It's heavy metal.
Well, I mean, you know, I feel like I hear that echoed in, for a lot of queer people too, you know, like right now in history, we're at this time where like, even, you know, I'm 34 years old. And, when I was growing up, you know, speaking of abject, like, you know, being queer was, you know, meant something, different than it does now, you know, the idea of not being discriminated against, you know, in employment, of being able to be like, to be out, to have certain kinds of relationships, to, you know, just be able to like say to people like that you're queer, was totally different. And I do get the sense that, some people are like, you know, when you grow up having to deal with so much oppression and so, and, you know, people, you know, shutting you out and treating you like trash, then you kind of come to like develop an identity around like,
Around otherness,
yeah, and around like, okay, cool. So like, I'm gonna like come together with my other outsiders, and we're gonna fortify ourselves. And like, your outsiderness like defines you, and you like come to be proud of it, and then it like comes to define you. And that, you know, even like, you know, the identity of queer is like a reclamation of a slur, right? So, and certain style. I mean, like having half of my head shaved, or you know, or having a septum piercing, right? Like, you know, is like an indication, of the kind of person that you are, like both to, like we were talking about before, like to signal your affiliation to like other people who are like a part of that culture, but also to be like, keep out, like beware of dog, like, you know,
to, like, I'm not for you.
So, yeah. And then when that changes, it's like, God damn it.
You're like, oh,
we have to look for new ways to rebel.
Is there?
Yeah.
I think it becomes more subtle. I think that it becomes more about nuance.
Yeah. And, you know, and I say this, while also like being aware that, you know, when I was younger, a lot of that stuff was, a lot of my like rebellion was like an axe that I had to grind. And I feel a little bit more like at peace with who I am, and not like I have to constantly like I feel less like I have something to prove. Yeah. At the same time, because that was my experience, all of those cultural signifiers of being punk, of being queer, of being a pervert, are a part of who I am. Like, even if I feel like less of a need to, constantly, prove it all the time
or externalize it all the time, which I think can be exhausting. I've been feeling that a little bit lately.
Sure.
With the tattoos, you can't really turn it off.
That's true. I mean, but okay, so that's also, I guess, like part of the appeal, both for tattooing oneself and in like your perception of tattooed people, is just that it's a commitment. Like you're making a commitment to something, like whether it's a style, whether it's a symbol, whether it's a story, you know, you are like, and it's a risk, you know, you're risking the fact that you one day might find your tattoo very tacky, you know, like you're risking the fact that you might be shut out of, you might not get a job because of your tattoos. You might like turn off somebody that you otherwise really like, cause they're like, oh, you know, I like don't like tattoos. Or I mean, who wants to date those people? But sometimes you do, sometimes you're in a situation where you're like alienated and you wish that you weren't, you're like making trouble for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. That's real. I think that's also, I mean, something that I've noticed, especially among young people since getting heavily tattooed has become more popularized.
Yeah.
Is that young people will get tattooed very quickly and they'll get heavily tattooed really quickly, which I think has a different psychological effect, or it doesn't quite give them space to adjust to being othered mentally.
That's interesting.
Because I've been around younger people who, you know, were like 21, 22, had face tattoos, throat tattoos, and they would be, you know, they'd be very indignant about being treated differently.
Yeah.
And in my mind, I'd be like, you chose this. This is a choice that you made.
Yeah.
And welcome to the world of feeling othered, which some people do not have the choice to join or not join.
Right.
And this, to me, makes me think that this is the first time in your life you've experienced this.
It's a really, really good point. Yeah. Sometimes people are like kind of, I feel like what you and I are talking about is that like what one thing that you and I have in common is that in some ways like getting tattooed was like an expression of like, if like you can't fire me, I quit to the world, right? Like, like if, you know, if the world is like, you seem weird, then we're like, yeah, like, fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah, I'm weird.
Yeah, I'm
check
weird.
This and shit out.
Yeah, and let me show you like exactly how weird I am on my own terms, on my own body, in a way that I'm really committed to and in a way that I have to earn, because as you mentioned, tattoos fucking hurt. and you have to take care of them, right? Like we were talking about that before as well. Like you like hurt, you know,
and you can't do it all at once. It's a time commitment as well. People ask me all the time how long it took me to get this tattooed. I'm like, 12 years.
Yeah.
12 years of getting tattooed pretty much all the time.
Yeah. Not to mention the financial investment. I mean, you know, maybe you're lucky enough to have a badass friend who will tattoo a pink triangle on your middle finger, like after, you know, the November 2016 election. And, you know, maybe you're lucky like that, but maybe you have like, you know, friends who are going to like drink H&H and like give each other stick and pokes. But most of the time, tattoos require an investment, and they should, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, first of all, like, tattooing is an art, and you got to do it right. And, you know, it's surgery.
Well, that's another way that I see tattooing changing now, is because we're already seeing a backlash to the legitimization of tattooing.
And, interesting.
And, you know, because people now do understand tattoos as a social signifier, like in a financial or, you know, in a like an economic sense.
Right.
Because people now know, oh, tattoos are expensive. Nice tattoos are expensive.
Right. So it's a status symbol.
People who have a lot of disposable income are choosing to show that through the tattoos
totally.
That they get, or, you know, it's like, I'll notice that. And you can do a quick scan of it too. When you meet people, when you have a new client come in, sometimes you'll be like, oh, okay, I see. You're very serious about spending money on getting tattooed, because I can see you have tattoos from this person and this person and this person. And I know what their rate is.
Yeah.
So I think people who are invested in being anti and being rebellious and having tattoos be a way to signify that are reacting against that in a way and wanting more homemade looking tattoos. I'm sure you've noticed there's a rise in like stick and poke tattooing.
Yes.
Or, you know, homemade machine tattooing or tattoos that look a little more crude, like black work kind of tattoos.
Yeah.
tattoos that look more hand-drawn, look more imperfect.
It's so really interesting.
I see that being a way that people are sort of pushing back against a very posh kind of sexy image of tattooing.
Well, yeah, and, you know, if you're able to look at a tattoo and understand, like, differences in style and, like, aesthetics, you will also see, like, certain tattoos are, yeah, like, aesthetically designed to just, like, look expensive in the same right. way that, like, right. some cars are meant to look flashy. Yeah. And, you know, people have, like, Ferrari tattoos, and I don't mean, like, tattoos of a Ferrari, although that actually might be kind of cool. But, like, you know, like, the equivalent of, like, something, like a flashy...
Definitely. I hope my tattoos are like the matte black Jeep Cherokee tattoo. You know?
Well, I mean, these things do also come down to a matter of taste, right? Like, I see, you know, especially living in Brooklyn, like, you do, like, see, like, a certain, like class of new money.
Yeah.
That where it's, like, people who have come up in a time where tattoos, like, represent, like, an edge, or they represent, like, you know, being artistic or being a creative class, like, or even just being, like an urban person, like an elite coastal, you know, yeah. country ruiner. You know, but they have money, and so then they have all of these, like, precise tastes and, like, home decor and, like, you know, their fancy bicycles and their, you know,
everything's curated in the same way.
Yeah, and you know, so it is a matter of taste. Like, I see those, like, tattoos that are, like, very symmetrical and, like, very, like controlled and aesthetically I don't even know how to describe it, just like I feel it's just not my style.
I know what you mean. Well, they say that you can't trust anyone that only has good tattoos.
Dude. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, and then that gets into sort of like what you were saying before about when you look at someone, you know, tattoos are a language that you tell in your body, that you tell with your body. But, you know, it's like a language that you're making up yourself, you know, because you're taking a symbol and, like, imbuing it with the meaning of what it's meant to you. And so this is why, and we'll just, like, I guess I'll just come to this now. I, like, have become so, so, so annoyed with people asking me the stories of my tattoos.
Yeah.
And when I was younger, I was kind of like, well, if I didn't want people to ask me about my tattoos, then I shouldn't have gotten tattoos.
Nope.
And I've totally, totally come around from that way of thinking. It does come back to what we were talking about before with entitlement. But the thing that has really started to bother me is, like, the idea that because usually people who ask people about tattoos, like, don't have tattoos.
Yeah.
And so, you know, really when somebody is asking me about that, they really actually, like, want to talk about themselves.
Yes.
And it, like, reveals more about them than, like, an actual curiosity about me. Because 9 times out of 10, what that person really wants to express is not, I'm curious about your life mm-hmm. and your stories, and more, I want to express to you that I'm uncomfortable with something that I don't understand, which is why you would, like, put yourself through all of that mm-hmm. pain to have this thing branded on you forever. And I want you to explain it to me in a way that, like, I can understand, like, oh, it's, like, sentimental because it, like, represents, like, my dead grandma. Oh, okay, I can understand that. Or, now I can see, like, yeah. why you put yourself through that. And, like, I don't know, that's also why I've, like, really enjoyed recently, like, getting a lot of Friday the 13th tattoos, where I, like, go in and I, like, have one artist who I know that I like his work, so I know I'm gonna, like, having his stuff on me, and, like, looking in a flash and being like, I will get this pig today. I will get these crystals today. No story. The story is the experience of going in to get them. Mm-hmm. And also, like, if it does mean anything, what it means is, like, giving yourself over to spontaneity and, like, not being so precious about, like,
what every little thing means, and that it has to have some sort of like platonic perfect meaning in order to be like worth being a tattoo.
Yeah.
But nobody wants to hear that story when they ask. So I've just taken to telling people that when they want to know the story behind my tattoos, I just tell them that I'm a nihilist. And that is why, and that usually shuts them up.
I'll lie to people. If people ask me if I do tattoos, depending on the situation, I'll be like, no, I don't actually. I just have a lot.
That's funny.
Because people just want to tell you all about what they want to get. How much is it going to cost? They want your professional opinion. And I'm like, I'm not working right now. I'm on an airplane.
Dude.
I don't do tattoos. Sorry to disappoint you.
It's so interesting.
Actually, one time I was on a plane and this lady would just, I could tell she just wanted to start in, and she just really started going there. And it was at the very beginning of this, of a 3-hour plane ride. Okay. And I was, and finally I was like, you know what? I actually got them when I was in prison and I don't want to talk about it.
Yes.
She did not talk to me for the rest of the flight.
Oh my God. I might start using that. Yeah. You know, it's so interesting how similar that is to sex work. Like, it just in the sense that, like, when people find out that you're a sex worker in the same way, or that you've done sex work in the same way that when they find out that you're a tattoo artist, all of a sudden they just want to talk about themselves. They want to talk about their feelings about sex or tattoos. Mm-hmm. They want to talk about, like, I could never do that.
Yes.
Whether it's...
Yeah.
Getting a tattoo or performing in porn, like, you know, or they want to talk about their kids, like, oh, if my kid ever got a tattoo or performed in porn, you know, and it's like,
that is so true. Yeah.
Again, like, this is me, like, looking for who the fuck asked you, you know?
Yeah, definitely looking for a window to cast some judgment or just
to talk about themselves.
To have a soapbox.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I do think I've actually made this comparison before that to me, I mean, I have not worked in a strip club personally, but I have a lot of friends who do sex work and who do that specifically. And it seems very similar to me, tattooing and stripping, because there's a lot of having to create intimacy very quickly or create the illusion of intimacy very quickly.
Right.
Sometimes in the space of like 15 to 30 minutes with somebody that you have never met before.
Totally.
Making them feel really safe, making them feel like their personal story is being understood.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
You know, they're in a space where they probably feel a little bit physically uncomfortable or a little hesitant, having to reassure them that they're okay, that it's going to be fine. You know, feigning interest in something that you might not be that interested in. Listening to them talking about themselves.
And
you know,
also
tipping your DJ, tipping your shop assistant.
Yeah. And also, like, to the person who's getting tattooed, they are like fixated on you and sort of like making, like valorizing you and like seeing you as this sort of like divine, like singular creature that is like doing this sort of like magic thing to you. But like, they're just another client to you. You're like, oh, I can imagine like somebody coming up to you in a bar and being like, hello, you tattooed me. Don't you remember? And be like, I've tattooed like,
oh no, that's happened to me before. And I always do feel horrible because I'm really face blind too. And so I always feel like such an asshole, but yeah, I mean, I do think, I mean, there are so many power dynamics at play there also, but tattooing in that way is also very performative. You know, for example, you'll kind of read your client and say, okay, it's a little different when you have clients who you have long-term and you become comfortable with each other and get to know each other a little bit. But, you know, in like a walk-in situation or a new client situation when you think, okay, what tattoo or hat does this person want me to wear? Do they want me to regale them with crazy stories of the weirdest tattoo I ever did and the craziest client I ever had? Or do they want to be tattooed in total silence? Or do they want to tell me all about their feelings and have a therapy session?
Thanks for listening to episode 44. Tune in on January 15th for part 2.
follow at Tina Horns Ass on Twitter and Instagram. Subscribe on Acast, iTunes, Stitcher, etc. And take a few seconds to write a review and tell your friends about the show. Visit whyarepeopleintothat.com to subscribe to my newsletter and listen to our entire archive. As ever, Why Are People Into That is produced and hosted by yours truly, Tina Horn. Our theme song is by Vivid Windows. This is their new track, Arteries. This is the fourth original tune that I have used in the four seasons of Why Are People Into That, and I'm so excited to have a brand new song by them for you to enjoy. Vivid Windows, which is spelled VVDWNDWS, are from Oakland, California, and you can check out all of their music on SoundCloud. Our website was designed by Justin Levesque, and this project is exclusively supported by my generous and badass patrons. Get under my skin by pledging patreon.com/TinaHorn. Until next time, I'll be pondering the friendship tattoo I want to get with you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.